حفيد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته. And السلام عليكم to your listeners.
Now, whilst the humanitarian crisis in the Middle East continues to unfold, the economic disaster in the region also continues to unfold. Update us on the latest report released by the IMF.
That's right. On Friday of last week, the IMF released another document, another record, once again highlighting that, as you rightly mentioned, what's happening in the Middle East is about the humanitarian crisis and also the economic crisis that's affecting people in every which way, whether it's on the breadline, people on the ground, the everyday person, and people even in the upper echelons of society throughout the Middle East. The Middle Eastern economy has been plunging into decline since the past 6 years. It has created development challenges and very daunting economic problems. If we look at the economy in the Middle East, it seems to be nosediving, and there are fiscal imbalances. The labor markets are completely decimated across the region. We know that much of the Middle East is still calling on donor countries to help and to coordinate humanitarian and relief efforts. And as this continues, we find that in the conflict zones, it becomes worse. There's a personal wealth loss, there's income losses that are huge. There's a lack of jobs, a lack of education, all leading to an economic disarray throughout the region. We often look at the Middle Eastern economy, and many of us see it as being the Gulf states, or being just Saudi Arabia and Oman, the much richer countries. But the Middle East is much more than just that. It's not only just about oil. And we know countries like Egypt, were known to export their wheat and their fruits, as well as Syria itself, known to export everything from the extract of the famous Damask roses to minerals and food items, clothing and textile. All of these countries are facing a very difficult time. They have large numbers of refugees within the country. There's weak confidence, security issues that make it very difficult to reform the economy in these countries. So to put it out, let's look at the economic cost factors to the war and how it's affecting people on the ground. After 4 years of civil war, Syria's GDP has fallen by more than half. Yemen's economy has contracted by about 35% just in the last year. Libya's economy has fallen by 24%. We know the damages to war in these countries has accounted for billions of dollars. In fact, more than 230% of their GDP. There's a strain on policies, on economics, on the state revenues in the Middle East. This is a sobering reminder of how terrible the situation is in the Middle East. People unable to afford basic groceries and even unable to afford sending their children to schools as refugee populations increase, classroom sizes swell, and the quality of education decreases. And so it is that the economic state in much of the Middle East affects people on the ground. It affects their personal self-esteem and their confidence. It affects whether or not people live or die, because it seriously affects the issue of food and starvation crisis. And it affects, for many of you who are having your morning coffee, thinking that perhaps with all of what's happening in the Middle East and the climate change that's affecting the Middle East, that perhaps in the next 15 years, that coffee would be in a decline. And by 2080, there may not even be any more coffee left. Sounds disastrous, sounds paranoid, but it really isn't when you consider all the economic factors at play in the Middle East.
Now, moving on to the Hajj, 1.8 million Hujjaj on Hajj this year. Many have returned home, others begin their journey this week. They represent the aspirations and challenges of the Ummah. Share a few of these stories with us, please.
Yeah, they do. One example, and that's a story we did the week before Eid about the Yemenis, 20,000 of them who performed Hajj this year, and over 8,000 of them who were stranded in the last week before Hajj at the only open border crossing, the Wadia border crossing. So one example is Abu Fadl al-Shawsh, and he went for Hajj from his home region called Rima, and he was on his way back, and news agencies interviewed him, and he spoke about what it was like to cross, and in all, from crossing from Yemen into Saudi Arabia by bus, thousands of kilometers. And he says if there was no vehicle, he would even have walked. He works for the Justice Ministry. And he says a Yemeni will do whatever it takes to perform the Hajj. An example of pure resilience and faith. Another example is of a Pakistani Haji, brother Talib al-Haq. He first made Hajj 40 years ago and then worked there during that time as a laborer, went home, married, raised a family of 6 daughters, and now came back with his wife and 3 youngest daughters and found that everything has changed. He says when he came on Hajj 40 years ago by car, he could almost park right at the entrance of the holy site. So it's been a very big difference for him on his Hajj. He says when he arrived by plane from Karachi, it cost more than $7,500. Another example is a sister from Senegal in West Africa. She's a legal expert and she comes often for Umrah and Hajj. 60 years old, she's performed Hajj more than 5 times and says it's a chance to keep grounded and to stay away from the material aspects of life. She said something so beautiful. She said, the humility that enters us in Mecca when we face the grandeur of Allah. That's what she hopes to take back. And finally, another individual, Karim Rafas, 33 years old, grew up in the south of France and lives now in Dubai where he works in manufacturing. So his parents and brother joined him from France to perform the Hajj. And although he has no financial difficulties, he says, Hajj for him has been an investment of time, but it was so worth it because the Hajj is an exercise of faith. Examples of 3 different people coming from 3 very different backgrounds and their reflections as they head back home after Hajj 1437.
Inspirational indeed. A quick question on the Hajj. Sure. Is there an impression that the Saudis were trying very hard this year to ensure that they were their image was projected as a very positive one, especially considering what is happening with Iran? On social media, you had all these pictures of security guards helping the elderly and helping the kids. Were they trying a bit too hard?
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, let's look at it from one angle. Saudi Arabia has always Saudi Arabians at least, have been always very supportive, very patriotic, very, very nationalistic. If you look only at their history syllabus and even just generally all their subjects are injected with a sense of patriotism and nationalism in the government schools at least. Anyone who's lived there or traveled there extensively will know this as well. So they've always been very, very proud of their Boy Scouts, about their military, about their army, that helps at the Hajj time. It could be seen from one of 2 ways. There has been a greater effort, and they've tried really hard this year about their tiff with Iran, a war of words, but also of the tragedy that's happened previously, and to put out that image that Saudi Arabia is very responsible, very careful, and making the best effort that they can to ensure a safe Hajj for everyone. But on the other hand, we also see a rise, a very, very drastic rise this year in social media and all platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchatting, Periscope, all of these have grown tremendously in the last year, unimaginably. So as a result of that, we're seeing more on social media, and perhaps that's also highlighting it. So there's 2 elements to look at: the rise of social media and how it's being used by young and old, and how it's been used in favor of the Saudi army, government, and the Hajj ministry. It's something we definitely spoke about in depth on hashtag Hajj. Also, on the other hand, that yes, Saudi Arabia has made greater, more concerted efforts this time round, and it seems to have paid off for their campaign to set out with their initial objectives that have been met. Yeah.
Hafidh, as always, JazakAllah for your time. Much appreciated.
You're most welcome. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. That was this week's Middle East Update with Hafidha Rehana Omar.